KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is Austin Roof, and it's time for the fish report here on KSDP. We have numbers for the Alaska Peninsula for escapement as well as harvest, and we'll be looking at Bristol Bay as well. No new harvest numbers for Chignik, but they will have an opening beginning today at 2 p.m., so we should have some new harvest numbers here shortly for the Chignik area. For the harvest for the Alaska Peninsula on the 23rd of June 2025, there were 64,000 sockeye delivered yesterday across the region for a total of 505,000. 20,000 pinks were delivered for a total of 88,000, and 25,000 chum for a total of 128,000 chum delivered across the Alaska Peninsula. Shumagin Island had 15,000 sockeye yesterday for a total of 91,000 to date, 11,000 pinks for a total of 31,000, and 18,000 chum for a total of 45,000 chum to date. South Unimak had 13,000 sockeye delivered yesterday, they're at 286,000. 7,000 pinks for a total of 56,000, and 7,000 chum for a total of 82,000 to date. No new fishing at Nelson Lagoon, but there was some at Port Muller to Outer Port Hyden. 37,000 sockeye were delivered yesterday for a total of 96,000 to date. Looking at the Bristol Bay in-season harvest, there was fishing all across the area except for Naknek. 500,000 sockeye were delivered yesterday, 550,000. For a total now of 1.2 million, just crossing the 1 million fish count for the total area. Ugashik had 160,000 sockeye delivered yesterday. They're at 286,000. Egigik had 44,000 for a total of 275,000. As I said before, Naknek still closed, but the Nushagik had 344,000 sockeye yesterday. They're at 667,000. Some fishing in Togiak, where they had 2,500 fish harvested and delivered yesterday for a total now of 4,200 to date. Looking at the escapement across the Alaska Peninsula, yesterday 7,000 sockeye escaped through the Chignik River for a total of 165,000 to date. Nelson River had 9,200, they're at 78,000. The next recent year, or the in the last 10 years, the next count was in 2017 where they had 8,600 by this time. The Bear River had 2,700 yesterday, they're at 16,000. Ilnik had 432 for a total of 15,000. And then 8 fish up the Orzinski Weir yesterday for a total now of 635,000 to date. And that will do it here for the Fish Report on KSDP. This was brought to you by the Aleut Corporation.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As the Trump administration looks to combine multiple fire agencies under one organization, firefighter numbers are dwindling. Northwest Public Broadcasting's Lauren Patterson reports on how the Nez Perce tribe is stepping up despite the challenges.
Three young firefighters are standing under the hot sun in Lapway, Idaho, doing an engine check on one of their fire trucks. All of them are tribal members and firefighters for the Nez Perce tribe. Riston Bullock is going into his 13th season. He says he does this job because he's dedicated to protecting the land and his community.
Now that I've been in fire for so long, it's kind of more being the first one to respond, put the fires out.
A big challenge here in Idaho and across the nation is that there aren't enough people to help.
We're losing firefighters. The numbers are going down.
People can still volunteer, but
we need people at the shop ready to go when those fires start.
Across from the shop in the air-conditioned office, Jeff Handel, the fire management officer, is on the phone trying to schedule repairs for fire trucks.
What I need is I've got a couple rigs that need radios put
He's in. Also worried the younger generation doesn't seem too interested in firefighting.
It's pretty tough in today's world when you can get a job and work from home and do okay financially. Why would you want to go out and do the firefighting thing, which is very hard work?
Back at the shop, the firefighters are organizing equipment like ropes and hatchets. There could be changes coming to how the Nez Perce Tribal Fire Crew works with other agencies in the region. The Trump administration is trying to merge all federal firefighting into a single agency. That could mean shifting thousands of jobs around just as fire season is ramping up. Bullock says he's not sure how that would work.
I feel like it'll just kind of be a new name, but I still feel like we'll still have our shops and everything here. We'll be mixed out through each other. And
approximately $1.2 billion will be requested as part of the new Wildland Fire Service budget. For now, Bullock and the rest of the crew aren't giving it too much thought. They're busy getting ready for the next call. Reporting in Lapway, Idaho, I'm Lauren Patterson.
The U.S. Senate is still drafting its version of President Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Tucked away in that proposed budget is a measure to renew compensation for those who had been exposed to radiation from uranium mining and nuclear weapons testing. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
If finalized, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act would now sunset in 2028. It also expands eligibility for claims from the Trinity test site in New Mexico, where the first atomic bomb was detonated, and to more uranium miners. The Navajo Nation has been lobbying to reinstate RECA since it expired last June.
I'm in just so much pain all the time.
Maggie Billyman is Navajo. She has COPD and was recently diagnosed with liver and kidney disease. While downwinders like herself are hopeful about RECA returning, they're also concerned that lawmakers are considering huge cuts to health services.
This big, beautiful bill is just something else. You get help from the RECA compensation, right? And then take Medicaid and Medicare. It just doesn't make any sense.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Janie Hipp was recently named Chickasaw Nation Dynamic Woman of the Year by Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby. Hipp has dedicated her nearly four-decade career to food sovereignty through agricultural law, including her work at the USDA and the Native American Agriculture Fund. The award honors Chickasaw women who have made significant contributions to the Oklahoma tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Drummond Woodsum, a full-service law firm whose nationally recognized tribal nations practice provides services to tribal nations and their enterprises, and to companies that do business with tribes across the country. More at dwmlaw.com. DT Track, your healthcare partner across Indian country, supports this show. DT Track provides culturally competent nationwide healthcare staffing to IHS, tribal, and urban health facilities. More at dt-track.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Extremely dry in some places and will take a substantial amount of rain before that duff layer won't burn anymore.
Interior firefighters welcome rain but expect more lightning-caused fires later this week. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 24th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, businesses brace for a new minimum wage law with no regulations from the state.
Businesses across the state are frustrated, scared, they're terrified about what enforcement's going to look like.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is about you, the community we serve. Thank you for tuning in.
Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Cold and rainy weather has slowed wildfires raging in interior Alaska since late last week. Firefighters gained some ground overnight, but the fires threatening neighborhoods in Healy, Tok, and parts of Fairbanks are by no means out. Sam Harrell with the Alaska Division of Forestry says under the long summer sun, the forest is still like a tinderbox.
the duff layer, that vegetative mat that makes up our forest floor or our tundra, it's very dry, extremely dry in some places, and will take a substantial amount of rain before that duff layer won't burn anymore. And so this is just a respite.
Officials still don't know how many structures have been lost, but Harold says the Bear Creek fire near Healy has burned several homes and outbuildings in its path. At least 100 Healy residents have been asked to evacuate. Evacuation orders for about 200 households in Fairbanks are still in effect. Firefighters are also getting ready for more fires brought about by thunderstorms that will move through the area in the second half of the week. Here's Alikia Srinivasan with the National Weather Service.
We are seeing the main thunderstorm potential for the eastern interior along the Alcan border near Eagle and Circle, kind of covering the central interior region as well.
Meanwhile, federal fire crews have been arriving from the lower 48 to help contain the state's two top priority wildfires, which are threatening Healy and neighborhoods north of Fairbanks. Fairbanks Borough Mayor Grier Hopkins says that's been a game changer.
It brings in a lot more resources and cooperation, and they're still working really closely with our local people here on the ground to make sure that our local knowledge is getting to the firefighters coming in from outside.
Air quality has been slow to improve around Fairbanks and Healy, but recent rains have brought down Fairbanks' rating from unhealthy to moderate. The Fairbanks Borough has opened a breathing room at the local public library for people hoping to get out of the smoke. New Talk is heading into its third summer without any planned housing construction. And nearly half of the houses that are standing in the new community have serious problems. The village's relocation was supposed to be a blueprint for how best to move people most impacted by a changing climate. As KYUK's Emily Schwing reports, some experts who've worked on the relocation say it's a cautionary tale that offers valuable lessons for the future.
There are a lot of reasons for why it's taken 4 decades to move New Talk. Piecemeal federal funding, inadequate planning from outside agencies, internal political conflict within the tribal council. And a lot of problems have followed people to the new community, Machtavik. One of them is that there's not enough housing. And some of the new housing in Machtavik has serious problems.
This used to close and then...
Francis Tom is a New Talk Village Council member. He lives in a modest blue two-bedroom home in Machtavik.
See?
Oh, yeah.
Gotta lift it up and close it.
2 years ago, his doors stopped closing properly, and he noticed gaps forming between the walls and the floor in the ceiling. He struggled to keep his house warm in the winter, and he noticed water and condensation inside.
Have you talked to anybody about coming to help figure out how to fix it?
No, not really.
Okay. Do you think it can be repaired?
I hope so. I think these are like California houses.
This house is barely 3 years old, and Tom is not convinced it's built for the high winds, driving rain and snow, and the generally wet conditions that exist in Machtavik. Emmett LaFell, a Fairbanks-based building inspector and energy auditor, agrees.
Well, I've seen lots of different construction across the state of Alaska. For this being new construction, absolutely. This is still some of the worst new construction I've ever seen.
LaFell has more than 15 years of experience in cold climate building design. In a report, he documented several instances of code violations and serious concerns about structural integrity and overall quality of some of Machtavik's brand new housing.
There is no manual to relocation of communities anywhere.
Jackie Schaefer is the director of climate initiatives for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, one among several organizations and state and federal agencies that have been working to support New Talk for years. The U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs is the largest funder of this relocation. Its former Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs, Brian Newland, said back in November of 2022 that this relocation is one of the first of its kind in the nation.
We've never really done anything like this before in this country, particularly for tribes.
In 2023, the BIA spent thousands of dollars to send half a dozen people from Newland's office and other BIA staff to Machtavik to tour new housing construction alongside New Talk Village Council members. The housing was paid for with funds from both the BIA and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Village council members say everyone on that tour saw water damage inside some of the brand new homes. The light fixtures were filled with water, but no repairs have ever been made. Jackie Schaefer with the statewide Tribal Health Consortium was also on that tour.
Tribes say this is not the outcome we thought. We bring the federal agency in there, they look at it. What they do from that point on is out of our control, right?
Her organization has been providing technical assistance to the tribe for this relocation for years.
Getting those agencies into the homes is technical assistance. It's showing the funder what the outcome was. That is our job. But that nobody, there is no accountability, and nobody has gone back to take responsibility of that is travesty. I don't know what else to call it.
A BIA spokesperson says staff has made three more visits to Machtovik in the last 2 years, but would not say why. The Neutauk Village Council's attorney, Matt Mead, also said in an email that multiple homes were inspected by independent engineers this past year. But he wouldn't provide those inspections, and two tribal council members have disputed his claim, including Francis Tom.
Have you ever had somebody come in and do a formal inspection other than me and Emmett?
Nobody.
At least a dozen other residents denied anyone other than LaFell had ever been inside their homes to inspect them. There are three different housing projects in Machtovik. KYUK hired Emmett LaFell last year to inspect all three different designs because the village council and federal agencies couldn't provide formal inspections. LaFell measured air leakage. He assessed the homes for tightness, energy efficiency, and safety. And he found serious problems with one of the designs.
This was very leaky. And the impact is so quickly realized. And it's because of the coastal climate.
We sent LaFell's report to the owner of LeMay Engineering and Consulting. It's the Anchorage-based company that designed and built the homes with the most serious problems. Patrick LeMay, founder and owner, didn't respond to specific questions or multiple requests for comment, other than to say in an email, "I do not work for Neutauk any longer." KYUK also shared LaFell's inspection report with the Neutauk Village Council, its attorney, the BIA, and HUD, and they all declined to comment or answer specific questions about the condition of the housing or LaFell's findings. On behalf of the tribe, attorney Matt Mead disputed that homes in Machtovik were deteriorating. Jackie Schaefer with the Health Consortium says Neutauk's relocation was supposed to provide a model for dozens of Alaska Native communities that will need to move in the coming decades.
This is a forced location, relocation by nature, right? It's nature is forcing you to relocate, so it's not voluntary. We have to understand that. Nobody gets to choose.
She says this isn't the outcome anyone had hoped for, but it does still offer lessons for the future.
And, you know, Neutauk, it was a long process and patchwork of funding, and it did not flow well. And we are going to deal with unhealthy outcomes because of that. So how do we learn from that and better prepare decision-making that is timed appropriately so that it doesn't have a stop-and-go process, it has a better flow?
Whether it's deteriorating permafrost, riverbank erosion, or land subsidence, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says dozens of remote communities in Alaska are dealing with what Neutauk has dealt with for four decades. But those villages don't have another 40 years. In Machtovik, I'm Emily Schwing.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a program in Kayana invites youth to share one positive thing.
It's not just a building. It's like a home for ideas. It's healing. We bring in so much laughter and leadership.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It doesn't matter what you were wearing, what you were drinking, or what you agreed to in the past. Sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through multiple resources. Visit notaloneak.org to find help for yourself or a loved one. Remember, it's not your fault. This message sponsored by the Alaska Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
A Talkeetna man riding an all-terrain vehicle was struck and killed last night by an Alaska Railroad train. 45-year-old Brian Newdecker died in the collision at about 10 p.m. Monday near Montana Creek, according to Alaska State Troopers. Railroad spokeswoman Megan Clemens says a freight train headed north from Anchorage to Fairbanks encountered two ATVs traveling along the tracks. One had five people in it, while Newdecker was the other's sole occupant.
When they realized that a train was approaching, one of the ATVs was able to turn off the tracks. Unfortunately, the second ATV was not, and the driver was not able to get out of the ATV in time.
Clemens says people should not walk along or recreate on railroad tracks and should cross at designated crossings. She says trains can and do operate any time of day all year round.
And it's really challenging for a train to come to a stop in the event of seeing someone on the tracks.
Last month, another ATV was struck by an Alaska Railroad passenger train on a Talkeetna River rail bridge. That driver jumped off the ATV in time and no injuries were reported. A Juneau man died after falling roughly 150 feet while hiking near Salmon Creek Dam on Saturday afternoon. According to Alaska State Troopers, 64-year-old William Milks fell after tripping and losing footing while hiking with a group on the trail. Emergency responders rappelled down to the location where he fell and attempted to rescue him. Troopers say he died from his injuries. The man's body was recovered and sent to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage. His family has been notified. The Salmon Creek Dam is located about 3 miles up the Salmon Creek Valley. It's a popular hiking route for Juneau locals. Juneau Mountain Rescue, Alaska State Troopers, and Temsco helicopters conducted the emergency response and recovery effort. The ballot measure that increases the minimum wage in Alaska and requires paid sick leave becomes law next week, but business leaders don't yet have a clear outline of the rules to follow. That's because in May, Governor Mike Dunleavy announced an administrative order that paused new regulations in order to save the state money. Sarah Oates Harlow is president of the Alaska Cabaret, Hotel, Restaurant, and Retailers Association, or CHAR. She says the hospitality industry is heavily impacted by Ballot Measure 1, and that the lack of regulations is causing confusion for businesses in the industry.
We're about to see this massive piece of statute become effective with so much ambiguity and confusion for the industry. Businesses across the state are frustrated, scared. They're terrified about what enforcement's going to look like.
Harlow says the organization has fielded a flurry of inquiries about the law since voters approved it in the November election, including how the law applies to minors and if employees can cash out unused sick leave. On July 1st, the law increases the state's minimum wage to $13, allows workers to accrue sick leave, and bans employers from punishing employees who decline to attend political or religious meetings. The State Department of Labor and Workforce Development expects the regulations to be out for a 30-day public comment period by the end of June. Harlow says she's optimistic that will give business owners some clarification, but she says it's not ideal.
The regulations process is long, and you know, having drafts out there for public comment doesn't mean that that's actually what's going to become adopted and go into effect. Those regulations won't be effective until, you know, until the fall at the earliest.
A bill that would have exempted businesses with 15 or fewer employees from paying sick leave and dropped seasonal workers from the requirement is pending in the House. The Southeast Alaska economy is revving up, but there are serious obstacles to continued growth. Namely, young families are finding it difficult to live in the region, and many are leaving. Reversing the outmigration of young people is becoming a regular refrain of economists and others who keep an eye on trends. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The issue has been in the background for a few years now. The steady economic growth in sectors like cruise tourism and healthcare is undermined by a continued shortage of housing in Southeast and by a lack of childcare. Sitka Chamber of Commerce Director Rachel Roy was the commencement speaker for the University of Alaska Southeast Sitka campus graduation ceremony in May. Roy told the graduates that she had her first child the summer after her freshman year and continued to juggle babysitters and coursework through earning her master's degree. Roy stuck it out and encouraged her audience to do the same.
We need you. We need your skills, your curiosity, your resilience. We need your voice in research labs, in fishing boats, in classrooms, on city assemblies, and in boardrooms.
But it will take more than curiosity and resilience to keep young people in Southeast. In February, Melani Shivens presented a detailed report to the mid-session meeting of the Southeast Conference in Juneau. Many of her numbers, like the growth in jobs and wages, were really promising. But she told a story that spoke more loudly than any pie chart.
I ran into someone at the gym the other day, and I said, you know, when we're looking at these early numbers for 2024, I can tell you, just in a nutshell, the Southeast Alaska economy is great. And she said, well, tell that to my four daughters in their 20s that really want to move home and live here but can't afford to because the cost of housing is too high. And so I have a caveat. The Southeast Alaska economy is great, depending on who you are.
It wasn't too long ago that an efficiency apartment in Sitka cost about $750 a month. The March edition of Sitka's Economic Trends, published by the local Economic Development Association, reports those rents are now over $1,000. A three-bedroom unit in Sitka now goes for $2,100 a month. The four daughters Shivens heard about at the gym are a statistical sample of an even larger problem that has developed in Southeast over the last decade.
We have 6,000 fewer people of that sort of prime workforce age. We have 7,600 more seniors. But at the same time, we have 1,700 more jobs. So we're doing great on jobs. We're just struggling when it comes to having that strong workforce age population.
Prime workforce age refers to residents between the ages of 20 and 59. When prime workforce workers leave Southeast, so do their children. School enrollment in Southeast communities like Sitka has been in steady decline for at least two decades. Teacher turnover has been extraordinarily high the last few years. Sitka alone lost 14 teachers for the academic year that just ended. Sitka Representative Rebecca Hemshute is a former teacher. In an interview with KCAW, Hemshute said that she hopes an all-new teacher retirement bill now working its way through the legislature helps stabilize education and attracts a younger demographic to the state.
So when we have teachers who come here because we have, I hope, a great salary, we have great working conditions, and we offer some sort of retirement with dignity, and they invest in their community, and they raise their kids here, and they become great teachers over time, that's a win.
New housing is being built in most Southeast communities. Juneau tops the list with almost 1,200 units in the last 10 years. Ketchikan is next with 366, and Sitka third with 291. But Melani Shivens' report suggests that it's not enough to cure the shortage or to create affordability. Basically, the downward pressure of these economic factors is greater than the surge in jobs and wages. Southeast has lost over 4,000 residents in the last decade, and the strengthening economy is not bringing them back. State Department of Labor projections show 15,000 people leaving the entire state by 2050, with 12,000 coming from Southeast alone. But Shivens and others at the Southeast Conference believe this trend is reversible, like the ghost of Christmas future, a vision of what might happen that caused Ebenezer Scrooge to make significant changes now for the better. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. Make your impact at the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA is a leading workforce provider offering you a path to the career you want, with over 100 academic programs for you to choose from, an array of in-person, online, and hybrid course options, and resources to help you succeed on your journey. UAA is what you're looking for. Apply today. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Public media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Advocates say proposed changes to the SNAP food assistance program under the current version of President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill would create a level of food insecurity in Alaska that current services would not be able to meet. Kara Durr is CEO of the Food Bank of Alaska. During Talk of Alaska today, Durr raised concerns about multiple proposed changes to the program previously called food stamps. Those changes include more stringent work reporting requirements and a shift of costs from the federal government to the states. Any major drop in benefits, she says, would have cascading effects in many communities.
In rural Alaska, many of the grocery stores are receiving SNAP benefits, and they are under threat of closing if SNAP were to go away or if there were to be dramatic cuts. So then a community is losing their store. I know there's some concern with the Medicaid cuts in rural clinics and hospitals as well.
Under the U.S. House version of the bill, Alaska would be on the hook for an estimated $68 million at a time when the state already struggles to fund basic programs. Durr says it's unclear what would happen if the state gets saddled with that bill.
They would have a couple options. They would pay that cost-sharing amount. They would say, we can't pay it, and then benefits could be reduced, or they would just say, we're not going to do the program because we can't afford it anymore.
Durr says she's not seen a clear answer from members of Congress about what would happen if a state simply could not afford to administer the program. About a decade ago, a teenager in the northwest Arctic village of Kayana noticed something was missing in her community. There was no place for kids to go after school. So she founded a youth program. As KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports, after years of operating out of whatever space they could find, the program finally has its own building.
Really appreciate you coming around today.
About 40 people gathered on a windy day at Kayana's community building in early June. It's a decent-sized crowd for the small community of around 400 people, located about 60 miles east of Kotzebue. The group met for a blessing and meal at the newly renovated building that will house Kayana's youth program.
Go into this building and bless each and everyone that's here, Lord.
The program is called Opt in Kayana. The OPT stands for One Positive Thing, something that the group strives to do each day. Ivory Gerhardt Cyrus founded the program nearly a decade ago when she was 16 years old. She says the motivation was for her peers to have a place for activities after school.
I was starting to see that kids my age and were getting into bad stuff, and I thought they should have a fun place to go to do stuff safely.
Gerhardt Cyrus says the program is youth-led. Opt-in hosts cultural activities like beading, Inupiaq dance, and subsistence activities, but also things like board games, hula hooping, and youth conferences focused on difficult topics like bullying. Gerhardt Cyrus is the program's outgoing executive director and Ivory's mother. She says Opt-in is inclusive and helps connect young people with opportunities to suit their needs. Gerhardt Cyrus says the new building is a long time coming.
We've moved around from building to building to building for a long time. And, you know, we moved into one building and they said it was condemned. We moved into another building and we had to leave.
Gerhardt Cyrus says over the years, Opt-in has shuffled through 5 temporary locations, one without water or plumbing, another that had frozen pipes and asbestos. At one time, the program operated out of her house. The program continued during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the group sent out packages for young people to do activities in their own homes. Gerhardt Cyrus says around this time, the group asked Kayana City Council for a space of their own. There were strict rules for gatherings at the time.
All I remember is a bunch of youth were piled in my car and we were calling into the meeting.
The city agreed to rent Kayana's old community building for $1 a year. But there was a catch.
It was pretty old and run down and not level.
The group, with some financial help, fixed that. Through funding from the borough and mining company Tech, Gerhardt Cyrus says Opt-in was able to renovate the old building, add a new furnace and water heater, accessible shower, new roof, and cafeteria-style kitchen. Plywood was added to the floors to support the dance group. Shaden Barr participated in Opt-in when she was younger and now sits on its board. She says she's excited about the new space.
It's not just
a building. It's like a home for ideas. It's healing. We bring in so much laughter and leadership. It's a safe and welcoming place.
Barr says she enjoyed how the program exposed her to subsistence activities like fishing, but connecting with her culture through the program was particularly special.
My sister and one of our cousins, they got to perform our great-grandmother's traditional songs. That activity of just cultural dancing and bringing everyone together, we just got to do what my ancestors done.
Gerhardt Cyrus says Optin's building also hosts movement groups for elders, exercise that includes breaks to play bingo. She says at least once a month, the group also hosts an event for the whole community, like a pancake feed or youth conferences. Optin only operates in Kiana for now, but Gerhardt Cyrus says now that the group has their own space, they've started to reach out to other villages. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, Emily Schwing in Muktovik, Chris Clint, Ava White, and Madeline Rose in Anchorage, Clarice Larson in Juneau, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Desiree Hagen in Kiana. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky's our producer. Thanks to Wesley Early and Hannah Floor for filling in last week. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.
Why am I losing sleep over you? Reliving precious moments we knew. So many days have gone by, still I'm so lonely, and I guess there's just no getting over you. There's nothing I can do but spend all of my time out of my mind over you. The prison walls of my mind, there's still a part of you left behind. We'll be right back.
I can hardly sleep without you. Talking about the way. I know. popping. What happened?